In general, we are not in a position to interpret the dream of another person if he is unwilling to furnish us with the unconscious thoughts which lie behind the dream content, and for this reason the practical applicability of our method of dream interpretation is seriously curtailed. But there are a certain number of dreams, in contrast with the usual freedom displayed by the individual in fashioning his dream world with characteristic peculiarity, and thereby making it unintelligible, which almost everyone has dreamed in the same manner, and of which we are accustomed to assume that they have the same significance in the case of every dreamer. A peculiar interest belongs to these typical dreams for the reason that they probably all come from the same sources with every person, that they are thus particularly suited to give us information upon the sources of dreams. Typical dreams are worthy of the most exhaustive investigation. I shall, however, only give a somewhat detailed consideration to examples of this species, and for this purpose I shall first select the so-called embarrassment dream of nakedness, and the dream of the death of dear relatives. The dream of being naked or scantily clad in the presence of strangers occurs with the further addition that one is not at all ashamed of it, etc. But the dream of nakedness is worthy of our interest only when shame and embarrassment are felt in it, when one wishes to flee or to hide, and when one feels the strange inhibition that it is impossible to move from the spot and that one is incapable of altering the disagreeable situation. It is only in this connection that the dream is typical. The nucleus of its content may otherwise be brought into all kinds of relations, or may be replaced by individual amplifications. It is essentially a question of a disagreeable sensation of the nature of shame, the wish to be able to hide one's nakedness, chiefly by means of locomotion, without being able to accomplish this. I believe that the great majority of my readers will at some time have found themselves in this situation in a dream. Usually the nature and manner of the experience is indistinct. It is usually reported, "I was in my shirt," but this is rarely a clear image. In most cases, the lack of clothing is so indeterminate that it is designated in the report of the dream by a set of alternatives. "I was in my chemise," or "in my petticoat." As a rule, the deficiency in the toilet is not serious enough to justify the feeling of shame attached to it. For a person who has served in the army, nakedness is often replaced by a mode of adjustment that is contrary to regulations. "I am on the street without my sabre, and I see officers coming," or "I am without my necktie," or "I am wearing checkered civilian's trousers," etc. The persons before whom one is ashamed are almost always strangers with faces that have been left undetermined. It never occurs in the typical dream that one is reproved or even noticed on account of the dress which causes the embarrassment to oneself. Quite on the contrary, the people have an air of indifference, or, as I had opportunity to observe in a particularly clear dream, they look stiffly solemn. This is worth thinking about. The shamed embarrassment of the dreamer and the indifference of the spectators form a contradiction which often occurs in the dream. It would better accord with the feelings of the dreamer if the strangers looked at him in astonishment and laughed at him, or if they grew indignant. I think, however, that the latter unpleasant feature has been obviated by the tendency to wish fulfillment, while the embarrassment, being retained on some account or other, has been left standing, and thus the two parts fail to agree. We have interesting evidence to show that the dream, whose appearance has been partially disfigured by the tendency to wish fulfillment, has not been properly understood, for it has become the basis of a fairy tale familiar to us all in Andersen's version, The Emperor's New Clothes, and it has recently received poetic treatment by L. Fulda in The Talisman. In Andersen's fairy tale, we are told of two impostors who weave a costly garment for the emperor, which, however, shall be visible only to the good and true. The emperor goes forth clad in this invisible garment, and, the fabric serving as a sort of touchstone, all the people are frightened into acting as though they did not notice the nakedness of the emperor. But such is the situation in our dream. It does not require great boldness to assume that the unintelligible dream content has suggested the invention of a state of undress in which the situation that is being remembered becomes significant. This situation has then been deprived of its original meaning and placed at the service of other purposes. But we shall see that such misunderstanding of the dream content often occurs on account of the conscious activity of the second psychic system and is to be recognized as a factor in the ultimate formation of the dream. Furthermore, that in the development of the obsessions and phobias, similar misunderstandings, likewise within the same psychic personality, play a leading part. The source from which in our dream the material for this transformation is taken can also be explained. The impostor is the dream, the emperor is the dreamer himself, and the moralizing tendency betrays a hazy knowledge of the fact that the latent dream content is occupied with forbidden wishes which have become the victims of repression. The connection in which such dreams appear during my analysis of neurotics leaves no room for doubting that the dream is based upon a recollection from earliest childhood. Only in our childhood was there a time when we were seen by our relatives as well as by strange nurses, servant girls, and visitors in scanty clothing, and at that time we were not ashamed of our nakedness. It may be observed, in the case of children who are a little older, that being undressed has a kind of intoxicating effect upon them, instead of making them ashamed. They laugh, jump about, and strike their bodies. The mother, or whoever is present, forbids them to do this, and says, "Fie, that is shameful, you mustn't do that." Children often show exhibitional cravings. It is hardly possible to go through a village in our part of the country without meeting a 2 or 3 year old tot who lifts up his or her shirt before the traveller, perhaps in his honour. One of my patients has reserved in his conscious memory a scene from the 8th year of his life in which he had just undressed previous to going to bed and was about to dance into the room of his little sister in his undershirt when the servant prevented his doing it. In the childhood history of neurotics, denudation in the presence of children of the opposite sex plays a great part. In paranoia, the desire to be observed while dressing and undressing may be directly traced to these experiences. Among those remaining perverted, there is a class which has accentuated the childish impulse to a compulsion. They are the exhibitionists. This age of childhood in which the sense of shame is lacking seems to our later recollections a paradise, and paradise itself is nothing but a composite fantasy from the childhood of the individual. It is for this reason, too, that in paradise human beings are naked and are not ashamed until the moment arrives when the sense of shame and of fear are aroused. Expulsion follows, and sexual life and cultural development begin. Into this paradise the dream can take us back every night. We have already ventured the conjecture that the impressions from earliest childhood